This is continuing coverage in the trial of Alex Murdaugh from True Crime Today.
Welcome to our continuing coverage. I'm Tony Bruschi. Thanks for joining us. We're about to enter the courtroom for day number three of witness testimony. And we're also going to be hearing the audio from the police interrogation the night of the murders. I want to let you know the audio from the courtroom, not the greatest. So we've spent a good deal of time after receiving it trying to clear it up, trying to make it as audible as possible for you to hear. One thing I think it's fair to note in the trial today, there did seem to be a fair amount of disorganization on the part of some of the attorneys and the evidence they were trying to pull up from a projector that was having issues to finding some documents at one point. So I would suggest having your finger on that fast forward button throughout listening as we tried to edit out as much as we could of the dead spaces, but there may be a time or two where you need to move forward as they try to gather the pieces that they need as they go through the trial today. In this first segment, we are going to hear something that many have been asking for and has been released today in a redacted form. That is the police interrogation video that Alex sat down for the night of the murders. That will be in this very first segment. And with that, let's go to the courtroom.
Session. Judge Newman presiding. Please be seated.
Good morning. Anything before the jury comes in?
Yes, sir. I believe Mr. Fernandez needs to address one housekeeping matter before we bring the jury.
Morning, Your Honor. Just per the clerk's request, I'm going to list out a couple, six exhibits from yesterday under Captain Chapman's testimony, just clarifying for the record that they were put into evidence and without objection by the defense. That would be 189, 190, 191, 192. Those are four pictures that were put in under his testimony, and then 187 and 188. Those were the two drone videos.
And what do you want to do with that?
Clerk needed clarification on those numbers because it was unclear that those numbers were part of the record.
Okay.
Anything else before the jury comes in? You can bring the jury. Thank you, sir. Good morning.
Good morning.
All right, ladies and gentlemen, continuing on, day number five, state's case, next witness.
May it please the court?
Yes.
Your Honor, this time the state of South Carolina calls Detective Laura Rutland.
Over the right hand, left hand on the back. Confirm the testimony about to get the court in this trial shall be the truth to help you guide.
I do.
Thank you. Take a seat in the witness stand. State your name again. Spell your last name.
My name is Laura Rutland, R-U-T-L-A-N-D.
Good morning.
Good morning.
Are you nervous?
Yes.
Nobody's watching. You are Laura Rutland?
I am.
Please tell the ladies and gentlemen of this jury about Laura Rutland, where you're from, where you were born, where you lived, and a little bit of your background leading up to law enforcement, please, ma'am.
Good morning, everybody. I was born in Charleston, in South Carolina. When I was about 6 months old, my family moved back to England, where we were originally from. Lived there until I was about 3 or 4 years old. Came back to the United States. Grew up in Somerville, South Carolina. Graduated from Somerville High School. After I graduated, I was working as a dog groomer. Met my would-be my husband. We moved to Port Royal, South Carolina. He was in the Marine Corps, stationed at Parris Island at the time. Then we moved to Bluffton. We had decided, I decided to pursue law enforcement. I've always been a true crime nerd, into mysteries and things like that, so I decided to pursue law enforcement. I graduated from the South Carolina Criminal Justice Academy in 2010 and was working at the Bluffton Police Department, where I held various roles. Started on patrol, became a detective, then I was promoted to a supervisor, where I supervised a patrol shift, and then eventually supervised the detective unit at Bluffton PD. My husband and I decided we wanted a lot of kids, so after I had my third baby, I decided to try my civilian job, get out of law enforcement for a little bit with a better schedule. So I briefly worked on Parris Island as a sexual assault victim advocate for the Sexual Assault Response and Prevention Program. Realized I missed law enforcement, so I wanted to get back. So, especially investigations. I first tried Beaufort Police Department, but it would take several years for them to have an opening in criminal investigations. So then I came to the Colleton County Sheriff's Office, where they were seeking experienced detectives. And so I joined Colleton County Sheriff's Office in September 2020, and February 2021, I was transferred to the Criminal Investigation Division, where I currently am now. My main focus is child crimes, which means children of sexual and physical abuse. Those are the cases that I predominantly work, as well as I'm a South Carolina ICAC task force member, and what that means is it's internet crimes against children. And that's a task force that's partnership with the Attorney General's office. And we basically battle online child predators, child pornography, those types of cases. We do rotate homicides in the detective division among nine of us.
At some point, did you work at Parris Island?
I did, yes, sir.
Tell these folks what you did then.
I was a sexual assault victim advocate for civilians on the base.
And your training in law enforcement has been what? Detective.
It's been various things. It's been basic training to advanced training. You name it. I've attended several advanced trainings hosted by other law enforcement agencies, state and federal.
How many children do you have now?
We have four.
Okay. And does your husband work?
He does.
Does he work at home?
He does.
So you started full-time with Colleton in what year?
2020.
Okay. And what was your role when you first started with Colleton County Sheriff's Department?
I started on patrol to familiarize myself with the county.
And then did you work yourself, or not work out, but did you become a detective?
I did, yes.
Okay. And when was that?
February 2021.
On June 7th of 2021. Well, let me ask before I get there. Where do you, not to pry, don't want the world to know, but they're going to, where do you live?
I live in Ridgeland.
Now, on June 7th of 2021, were you on call?
I was.
Okay. How far is it from Ridgeland to here?
45 minutes to an hour, depending on traffic and what part of Colleton County I'm going to.
Did you receive a call to respond to a double homicide?
I did.
Okay. And where was that? Where were you supposed to respond? Okay.
Initially to the scene, 4147 Moselle Road, but due to my long commute, it was better that I stopped at the sheriff's office first and I be the one to prepare the search warrant for the property.
And who were you coordinating with during that? I mean, who was your boss?
That's Captain Jason Chapman.
And after you'd received the call, did you confer with Captain Chapman?
I did.
And as a result of that, what did you do?
I went to the sheriff's office, prepared the search warrant, was finally able to track down a magistrate. I had to wake him up out of his bed to sign the warrant, and I was able to secure a search warrant for the property.
Okay. And for 4147 Mazzell?
Yes, sir.
Okay. What did you do after you got the search warrant?
I notified everybody over the radio that I had the search warrant signed because I wasn't sure if the SLED crime scene unit was waiting on me, and it was still going to take some time to get out there. And then I made my way to 4147 Mazzell Road with the warrant.
Had you been out there before, to 4147 Mazzell?
Never.
When you went out there, did you know what your role was going to be as you were going out there?
I did not.
When you got to the scene, tell us what happened.
So when I pulled up, I noticed there were several SLED agents as well as Colleton County deputies at the scene. I was basically the last one there. And I met with my supervisor, Captain Jason Chapman, and presented them with the search warrant as well as SLED. He asked me if I knew the Murdoch family, to which I replied, I did not. They then asked me if I was familiar with a boat accident that had happened in Beaufort, and my reply was, I've heard of it, but I don't know the details. So with that information, they said, okay, you're going to be assigned as the liaison with the lead SLED agent on the case, who was identified as Senior Special Agent David Owen, and that my task was going to be to assist him with anything he may need that evening at the scene and throughout the investigation.
And I think we've heard prior testimony, but the case was turned over to SLED because of a potential conflict.
That's correct. That was one of the things my captain advised me of when I arrived at the search warrant. He advised me that SLED was going to be the lead agency on the case.
And did you know Special Agent David Owens prior to that night?
I did not.
But did you get to know him and actually get to work with him, so?
I did, yes, sir.
And let's start out with that job. When you first got to 4147, and you got your instructions, who were you going to work with, what were your observations? Tell these folks what you saw.
So the first thing as I approached I'm sure you've all heard of the kennels, was the overwhelming smell and a lot of water on the ground by the kennels. And then the first body that I approached was the deceased male. He was laying face down at an angle with his feet inside the plane of the door. There was obvious trauma to the top of his head. He was covered with a sheet, but I could still see the top of his head from underneath the sheet. Obvious trauma. There was brain, blood, hair, skull matter, all within the feed room and the ceiling. There was a deceased female approximately 30 feet across from where his body was, and she was covered as well. But I had been told that they both had gunshot wounds to their heads. And then from there, we located the 911 caller, Mr. Alec Murdoch.
Now, did you know, if I was referring to as Paul and Maggie, did you know Paul Murdoch and or Maggie Murdoch?
I did not.
Had you ever seen them before you saw them laying dead on the ground?
No.
At that point, did you walk any of the rest of the scene?
Not at that point.
Well, tell the folks what you did do after that.
We located Mr. Murdoch, Alec, standing at the back of the... There was his Suburban, and then there was, I believe, his brother Randy had arrived at the scene at that point, and they were standing behind Randy's truck, so they couldn't see the scene anymore. So we approached him and asked if he would speak with us. He introduced the man standing next to him as his personal attorney, Danny Henderson, and he agreed to speak with us. By this point, it had started to rain, so we utilized Agent Owen's vehicle to do the interview.
Now, before we get to that, had you made any other observations about bullet holes or shell casings prior to that?
Yes, there were shell casings in front of Maggie's head area, in front to the left on the ground. In between, there was like a gravel area in between the two buildings.
Had you seen what's been referred to as the feed room?
Yes.
Okay, what did you observe in there?
Inside the feed room, I did observe body matter that had been on the ceiling, as well as covered in items inside the feed room. There was shotgun wadding on the floor inside the feed room, as well as droplets of blood on the concrete.
Did you see any holes in the window?
Yeah, there was a window to the back of the feed room that had several holes in it.
I want to skip the statement for a second. All right. Mm-hmm. After you took the statement, we're going to get into that. Did you go back and look at the scene with either Captain Chapman, and I say the she, seen the shelters, the dog kennels, did you and or Captain Chapman or anybody else have an opportunity to go back and look?
I did.
Okay. Tell the ladies and gentlemen, first of all, why you did that and what were your observations, please, Ben?
Well, it was such a large scene. I decided to canvas the outer part of the scene. And while I was doing that, keep in mind it was late at night. It was dark, so we had flashlights. So while I was doing that, I noted some what appeared to me to be fresh shoe impressions in a sandy part of the shed on the left side of the hangar, what we're describing as the hangar. In between some tractors and the wall of the shed, there was several fresh shoe impressions.
And when you say fresh shoe impressions,
and obviously, what does that mean?
It means that they had been left fairly recently.
What did they appear to you to be?
They looked like a flat sandal, flip-flop type shoe. Not particularly large in size. Just flat.
Were they one set of footprints or two based on your observation?
It was one set of prints that looked like it went down one direction and possibly came back.
No doubt about that in your mind?
No doubt about
that. So if you watch me now, was it like one set of prints going this way?
Yes.
And then it looked like one set of prints coming back this way?
Yes, because they did overlap each other a little bit.
And did you, and who was with you when you were looking at this?
I was by myself initially, and then I found my supervisor, Captain Chapman, and showed him what I had found.
Where were y'all walking when you were looking at the prints?
We made the decision at that point, due to the type of incident that it was, and we didn't really know what we had yet, to follow the footprints and see if there was any other additional evidence and find out where that person may have been trying to go. So what we did is we stayed to the left side of the shoe prints, closest to the tractors, and followed the prints down. Noted that they stopped at the end of the building, turned around, and came back.
And I'm going to show you what's entered the States 194. Is that what you're just referring to?
No.
Okay. What does this depict?
That depicts several what appear to be boot prints on as well.
Is this the same path y'all walked?
Yes.
Okay. And let me show you. Stage 195, do you recognize this?
Yeah, those are the flat, just the flat ones, impressions.
I promise you I can't get you. Can we start now, Ron? Please. States 22. Do you recognize this and does it relate to your testimony?
Yes, it does.
Your Honor, States 22 without objection.
Okay. Submitted.
Are we on? Let me go back to what's just been entered as States 22. You said you recognize that. What is that, Detective?
That's in front of the hangar, the building. So Maggie would be to the right, and the shoe impressions I'm referring to would be on the left.
And getting a little closer view on States 194.
Yes, that's the left side of the hanger.
Can you show in this picture the prints you were talking about, the footprints?
Yes.
And can you come down here with the judge's permission?
Sure, please.
These flat ones. It's hard to see, there's a big glare.
Okay, let me put in States 195, too, Detective.
Yeah, these flat impressions, these flat ones, can you all see?
Were those foot impressions you saw that night? Impressions beside the flat ones that you saw?
Yeah.
Okay. On the evening of June 7th, early morning of June 8th of 2021?
That's correct.
You're positive?
Positive.
And again, when you and the captain walked, how far were you from the sandals?
A foot to the left.
Don't take this any bad way, but could some of those other prints be yours or the captain's, or you don't
know? It's possible.
Okay. Now, you were and I'm going to do this without putting it up. This is one of those pictures that we've uncovered, but I'm going to show you States 7. You're a lady?
Yes, sir.
You know what women's shoes look like?
Yes, sir.
Did you go and look at Maggie's shoes she was wearing?
I did.
Okay. Why'd you do that?
To see if they matched the flat impressions I had seen.
And were they similar to you?
Very similar. Yes.
And States 200, do you recognize those?
Yes.
And what are those?
Those are the sandals Ms. Myrtle had on.
And did they appear to be similar to the footprints you saw?
Yes, very.
Now, did Mr. Harpootman or one of the investigators contact you about these footprints?
He did.
When was that?
A few weeks ago.
And did they send you a picture of it?
They did.
Okay, was it the pictures we just put up?
It was.
And did you tell them that, or what did you tell them when they sent you that?
That those were not my impressions.
That those weren't your impressions, yeah?
Correct.
Volunteered to talk to them?
I did.
Sent you a picture of the shoe?
Yep.
You told them those weren't mine?
Correct.
All right, let's get back to what you said, Mr. On the defendant, Richard Alexander Murdoch. The defendant had said, introduced you to who before you started the interview?
Danny Henderson said he was his personal attorney.
His personal attorney?
Yes.
Did he want his attorney in the car with you?
He did.
Okay. And I believe you said it was raining?
Yes, sir.
So what did y'all do to get out of the elements?
We sat inside Agent Owens with Sled inside his vehicle.
And please tell the ladies and gentlemen of this jury specifically where everybody was sitting.
Agent Owen was in the driver's seat. Alec Murdoch was in the front passenger seat. I sat directly behind him. And then Mr. Henderson sat to my left.
Please listen to me.
First time, was that the first time you met Alex Murdoch?
It was.
Did he appear to you to be under the influence of alcohol, drugs, or any other intoxicant when you saw him?
He did not.
Did he appear to you to understand your questions and Special Agent David Owens' questions when y'all were talking to him?
He did.
Were his answers to either you or Agent Owens timely?
Yes.
Were they subject matter appropriate?
Yes, they were.
Did you have any trouble understanding the defendant when you were talking to him?
I did not.
Did he appear to have any trouble understanding you
and respond to your questions?
He did not. He may have asked twice to repeat a question, but he was understanding what was being discussed.
I will show you what's marked States 153. At my request, did you review this yesterday?
I did.
And does this States 153 accurately reflect the interview you, Agent Owens, had with the defendant, Richard Alexander Murdoch?
It does.
Your Honor, at this time, 153, I believe that okay.
Okay.
Let's admit it.
And with His Honor's permission and with the help of someone, we'd ask to respectfully publish.
All right, sir. I left the house without my watch.
12:57.
All right, Mr. Murdoch, state your full name for me, please.
Richard Alexander Murdoch.
And spell your last name so I get it correct.
M-U-R-D-A-U-G-H.
All right. And you go by Alec?
Yes, sir.
And date of birth, Mr. Murdoch?
May 27th, 1968.
And a good phone number for you.
803-942-1227.
And sir, what was your name?
Yeah, Danny Henderson.
Okay. All right. As I stated, I'm David Owen in Lower Rutland with Colleton County, and I'm with SLED. I hate to have to do this.
I understand. Yeah. I totally understand. Yeah. So you don't have any problem with it.
So, just start at the top, take your time.
Like when I came back here, mm-hmm. I mean, I pulled up and I could see him and, you know, I knew something was bad. I ran out. I knew it was really bad. My boy over there, I could see it was... And I could see his brain on his... And I ran over to Maggie and actually I think I tried to turn Paul over first. You know, I tried to turn him over, and I don't know. I figured it out. His cell phone popped out of his pocket. I started to try to do something with it, thinking maybe, but then I put it back down really quickly. Then I went to my wife, and I mean, I could see...
Mm-hmm. Did you touch Maggie at all?
I did. I touched them both.
Okay.
I tried to take, I tried to do it as limited as possible, mm-hmm. but I tried to take their pulse on both of them.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. And, you know, I called 911 pretty much right away, and she was very good. I talked to her. I told her I was going to get off the phone to call some family members. I did that.
What family members did you call?
I called my brother Randy. And I called my brother John. and I tried to call a little boy, real good friend that's right around the corner from here, but I didn't get him.
Okay. What all was around Paul when you walked up?
Blood.
Any other anything else?
I mean, there were some body things, yes, sir.
I mean, like any other evidence? I know you said the phone fell out the pocket, but did you see anything else that didn't belong or shouldn't belong or that wasn't part of Paul?
No, sir. Not, no, not good. No, sir.
How about Maggie?
No, sir.
You didn't see anything around them? What made you come out here tonight?
I went to, my mom's a late stage Alzheimer's patient. My dad's in the hospital. My mom gets anxious when she does. I went to check on them and Maggie. Maggie's a dog lover and okay. She fools with the dogs. And I knew she'd gone to the kennel. I was at the house. I left the house and went to my mom's. For just a little while, tried to call her when I left, texted her, no response. When I got back to the house was obviously nobody was in there, so I figured they're still up here fooling around. Paul was gonna be getting set up to plant. Our sunflower seeds got sprayed and died, and he was refiguring to plant the sunflower seeds.
Okay.
So I came back up here and I drove up and saw and called.
Had Maggie and Paul been arguing over anything?
No.
What was their relationship like?
Wonderful.
Wonderful. How about yours and Maggie's?
Wonderful. I mean, I'm sure we had little things here and there, but we had a wonderful marriage, wonderful relationship.
And yours and Paul's relationship?
As good as it could be.
How old is Paul?
22.
Okay. You know his date of birth?
I do. April 11th, 96 is his brother's. April 14th, 99 is Paul's.
How about, what's Maggie's full name?
Margaret Brandstetter Murdoch.
And her date of birth, sir?
September 15th, 1968.
Have y'all been having any problems out here? Trespassers?
None.
People breaking in?
None that I know of. The only thing that what comes to my mind is my son Paul was in a boat wreck a couple years ago.
Mm-hmm.
And there's been a, you know, he was charged with being arrested for being the driver. There's been a lot of negative publicity about that. And there's been a lot of people online just really vile stuff. But when Paul's out and about, I mean, people routinely, I don't think I know the full story, because I don't think they give it to me, but I mean, he's been punched and hit and just attacked a lot. So, you know, but I mean, nothing like this.
Yeah. Any one person in particular or group of people?
I don't know.
That you could think of?
Not that I know, no, sir.
Has he, other than being assaulted, has he received any direct threats related to the boat accident?
Oh, yes. All the time he gets threats.
Recently?
Yes, sir. I mean, he gets them all the time.
Okay.
He gets them all the time.
What kind of, I mean?
I'm going to kick your ass, you know. I've never been privy firsthand, you know.
Is that through social media or?
No, ma'am. It's mostly like if he goes out places is what, you know, what he goes out like somewhere. He's in college, so if he goes out, is what I understand.
Mm-hmm.
And I can find out better details from some of his younger friends on that.
Who's his best friend?
His best friend in Columbia is Will's chaplain, Will Loving, Bobby Boyle. Bobby Boyle, Will Chapman, and Paul were getting ready to move into a house together in Columbia.
You said Will Chapman and Will Loving?
Will's with an S, okay. Chapman, and Will with an L, Loving.
Okay.
Around here, his best friends are clearly Nolan Tootin and Rogan Gibson.
Tootin? Nolan Tootin?
Yes, sir.
And what was the other one? I'm sorry.
Rogan Gibson.
Have you talked with any of these guys tonight?
Talked with Nolan, yes, sir.
Is he out here?
Yes, sir.
Okay.
I tried to call Rogan, was one of the people that, he's the boy that I told you lives around the corner. Okay. That's very, you know, he's just a good, helpful young man. You mind if I open the door really quickly?
Go right ahead. Do what you need to do. So is there anybody that you can think of that we need to talk to tonight? Is there a name that comes to mind?
I mean, I can't tell you anybody that I'm overly suspicious of off the top of my head.
Okay.
You know? I mean, this is such a stupid thing. I'm even embarrassed to say it. But it just didn't make any sense. I just hired a guy out here.
Mm-hmm.
And he wasn't cutting the mustard, but I hadn't told him this yet. Paul's been working with him a lot. He killed the sunflower seeds in our dove field just recently, which is why Paul was here doing this. He told Paul a story the other day about how when he was in high school, he got in a fight with some black guys. And the FBI undercover team observed him fighting those guys and put him on an undercover team with three Navy SEALs. And that their job was to kill radical Black Panthers. And they did that from Myrtle Beach to Savannah. Now, I really don't think this guy, you know,
mm-hmm.
is probably the person, but that's just so friggin'.
Yeah, that's kind of far-fetched story.
It's weird, but he was off today.
Okay.
He took his daddy to the doctor.
What's his name?
C.B. Rowe.
R-O-W-E?
Yeah, and I sent him a message to text me earlier today about the sunflowers, and he called me back when I was on the way to my mom's house.
Mm-hmm. Did you talk to him at that time?
Briefly. I was on the phone with a lawyer friend of mine named Chris Wilson from Bamberg, so I told him I'd call him back tomorrow. See him in the morning.
When you briefly talked to Mr. Rowe, what was his demeanor or attitude or...
I mean, it seemed normal. I mean, I asked him about the sunflowers, and so, you know, I mean, I'm sure he's a little bit.
Where does he live?
I don't exactly know. Somewhere in in Bronson.
Okay. Do you have his phone number?
I do.
You got it with you, please, sir?
I do. You know, but I do think him and Paul got along pretty well.
Mm-hmm.
That's just really, really weird. All right. CB.
Right there. Lap.
He
Yeah, I know he called me, so I'll go down. Okay.
843-540-9335.
You need to get that phone on the charge, Alec, if you can.
Is that an iPhone?
Yes, sir.
Watch your leg for a second, please.
Thank you.
When did he tell that story to Paul?
Sometime last week.
Okay.
Sometime last week. My son Paul actually... And I really do not think, in all honesty, that it's him, but I know y'all got to check it out. But Paul was so taken aback by it that he sent, I'll find it, I got it on my phone. He recorded him saying bits and pieces of it.
Okay.
No. But for all his weirdness, I mean, I do think they got along.
Okay.
Pretty good.
How long had he been working here?
I guess about 3 or 4 pay periods, so 8 weeks, a couple months.
Okay. Going back to the boat incident, anybody on that boat really have a hard on for Paul? That you would think would come after him, or know of any direct threats from people on the boat?
I don't know of any direct threats between any of the people on the boat specifically, but I do think there's been a small amount of yip yap between a couple of them, but not recently.
Okay.
Most of this was stuff from people that Paul didn't really know.
Okay.
It was some people that he knew distantly, but more times than not, when I learned about it, it was somebody that he didn't know.
Okay.
It's like, for example, he went out in Charleston a couple months ago, came back, you know, he got a black eye. And, you know, he can't defend himself right now because he has these charges. So, you know, Paul was a real tough man's man.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he would just...
He would defend himself, but he hadn't been...
That's right, but...
How was he handling that case? Looming over everybody?
As far as what?
How was he handling it?
I've never been prouder of him than the way he has handled the pressures and the adversity in that situation. I think I've told Danny that before.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, Paul is a wonderful, wonderful, wonderful kid. He can do almost anything. He gets along with almost anybody.
Do y'all store any weapons out here?
We don't store them, but they're, you know, they're frequently out here.
Mm-hmm.
I need to find out if there were any out here because I know there was a shotgun. There was a 12-gauge shotgun out here. I'll have to find out exactly when that was. I think it got put up, but I'm not positive.
What did that shotgun look like?
It was a camouflage. I want to say it was a Benelli or maybe a Beretta. I can't remember which brand it is. But I don't think it was out here.
Okay.
Recently. But I'm not positive.
And the shotgun that you had when deputies pulled up, where did that come from?
I went to the house and I got a gun. Probably overreacting, but...
And was that when you pulled up and saw them?
No, I mean, I came out and... I mean, I called 911 first.
Mm-hmm.
Talked to them for a little while, and then I told her.
You told her?
That I was going to go to the house.
Okay.
And that I would let authorities know when they got here that I had a gun.
Okay. Do you happen to have a list of all your guns?
I can make one. I don't have one, yeah. But I can make one.
Okay. Well, I'm just saying, you know, so we could compare if that shotgun was out here and now it's missing.
Absolutely.
Try to figure that out.
I know, absolutely.
And I know living out here in the country, you probably have more than one or two.
We do. We probably have 20, 25 guns.
Yeah, shotguns, rifles.
Pistols.
Any rifles?
Yes, sir.
And what kind of rifles?
All kinds.
Yeah.
All kinds. I mean, you name it, across the board, we have them.
Okay.
And I mean, they're all of them we have are, you know, in a hunting room in our house.
What was their schedule today? When did they get home?
My son works for my brother, and he was coming home to deal with the sunflowers. He got here. He got here pretty early because he and I rode around looking at everything for a good little while, probably 45 minutes to an hour. Maggie had things she did in Charleston, and she had a doctor's appointment in Charleston, and she got back here. It was fairly late.
Was it dark yet when Paul got home?
No, Paul got home early.
Early, okay. So before dinner time?
Oh, yes, ma'am.
Lunchtime?
No, ma'am. Okay.
What brother does Paul work for?
John Marvin.
And what does Paul do for him?
Everything.
Just handyman?
Yes, sir.
Was it unusual for Maggie to feed the dogs this time of night or check on them?
Oh, no. I mean, she played with those dogs all the time. And it's especially common for her to, you know, she's been gone for a while, mm-hmm. to come and let especially two of them out to run.
Okay, so she pretty regularly comes out here in the evenings?
Very regularly.
Okay.
She comes out here a lot.
Do you have any cameras on your property?
I have deer cameras, but none, you know, around up here.
Where are they at?
On different deer stands.
Okay, so deep in the woods?
Well, not necessarily deep in the mm-hmm. woods. Some of them are in fields and...
Okay.
But I don't... There's none that, you know, are near here.
Okay.
What doctor's appointment? What doctor did Maggie see today?
I forget the guy's name. Maggie's been having trouble with her. She's been having trouble with her stomach and her tooth. I'm not positive. It was sort of a routine visit, and I can't remember. She told me the name of him, and I can't. I want to say Gordine.
Okay.
Is who I think she saw.
So was she back home around supper time? Or 6 o'clock, 7 o'clock?
I don't think she got back quite that early. I think she got back a little bit later than that.
Okay. What did you do today? Were you at the office or?
Nope, I was home. I came home. Paul and I messed around. I was up at the house. I laid down, took a nap on the couch, probably, I don't know, 25, 30 minutes. I got up, I called Maggie, didn't get an answer, and I left to go to my mom's. She had said she might ride with me, but she normally doesn't when I go over there. And I think I texted her. And she's very good about answering the phone, so that was odd, or calling me back. Mm-hmm. So that was odd, but it wasn't that big a deal.
Now, what time was that?
What time was what?
That you sent her a text message.
I texted her at 9:08, going to check on M, be right back. And then I texted her at 9:47. That must be when I started to come back. I think I called her before that. But let me make sure. Pretty sure that I called her 9:45. And then I tried Paul. And then, no, I think that was riding. I think that might have been riding over there. I mean, my calls are right here.
Yeah.
So, obviously this is when at 10:06,
yes, sir.
Thank you. Mm-hmm. Take the call.
Anybody else want some gum?
No, sir.
You don't have any water, do you, Danny?
Sure.
I'm sorry. I don't need it.
If you, behind Danny's head is a case of water.
It's not a big deal.
Yeah, I got some right here.
Oh, well, thank you. Thank you, ma'am.
I'm sure we're going to have much more questions.
I'm available at, you know, you let me know.
What, what's another number in case I can't get you on your cell?
I don't have a house phone.
Okay.
My office number. I can give you my brother's cell phones.
All right. What's Randy's?
Okay, Randy's is 803-943-8881.
And John's?
John Marvin's is 843-321-5508.
And you said your dad's in the hospital?
Yes, sir.
Which hospital? Charleston or...
Savannah, Candler, St. Joseph's.
Is he doing okay, or what's...
He's having a really, really hard time. He's got a lot going on.
Okay.
You know, he's doing okay, given everything, but he's got a lot going on.
Mm. About Maggie's family, where are they?
Somerville.
Have you been in touch with them tonight?
Contacted, yes. I had my brother call Bart, the wife of his sister, and I mean the husband of Maggie's sister, so that they could go and tell Maggie's parents. I felt like they needed to hear it in person.
Mm-hmm.
And they are going there and calling me. So they must not be there yet.
Maggie's parents in Somerville?
Yes. And she, her mom just had a knee replacement surgery, and her dad really has trouble getting around nowadays.
Do you have any other children?
I do. I have a 24-year-old.
That's right, you said. What's his name?
Buster. Well, Richard Alexander Jr.
Okay. He goes by Buster.
He goes by Buster.
Is he here tonight?
He's on his way.
Okay. Laura, you got anything?
This one's hard, but when you first saw Paul, you said you tried to flip him over. Was he laying on his back or on his stomach?
Just like he is.
Just like he is, so you weren't able to move him. Okay.
No, ma'am.
Okay. And did he help Maggie a lot out here with the animals?
He helped everybody with everything.
Okay, so it was kind of routine for him to be out here as well in this, the evening?
This place is his absolute passion.
Okay.
I tried to turn him, and then I tried, and then I checked him, and I think I already knew, but I checked him.
And when you first pulled into the property, did you come from this direction where all our police cars are, or which way did you come in?
I went to the house.
Okay.
And then I came from the house.
This way.
Straight here, yes, ma'am.
Okay.
I mean, where my vehicle mm-hmm. was parked is... probably
is where it was. Okay.
Well, no, maybe not mm-hmm. exactly, but it was pretty close because okay. I came back the same route.
That's right, because you went back to get your shotgun.
When I came okay. back.
All right. I can't think of anything else right now, but, you know, we'll certainly be in touch.
Thank y'all for everything y'all are doing.
Yes, sir. So, you know, just to kind of let you know what's going to go on, we're going to be out here for quite some time. The coroner will take custody of Paul and Maggie.
Oh, yes.
Can I answer that?
Yeah, go ahead.
Yeah. What?
843.
No, let me. We're finished. Let me come out. Well, I'll be here when he gets here. No, don't let him come up here. Okay, yeah. I think we're about done. All right, thank you. So, I'm sorry.
Buster, getting here?
Okay. Yes, sir. I dropped my card.
Okay. Right, we'll get you another one.
Sorry. I'll get you one.
There you go.
Thank you.
Mm-hmm. You know, so the coroner will come over and talk to you. You know, they'll do the autopsy and everything, and then go from there.
Thank you.
But we'll come to you before we leave.
Thank you very much. Yes. Thank you. Thank you,
yes,
Mr. Rutland.
Yes, sir.
Thank you very much.
Yes. Here, you want this water?
Oh, yes, please. Thank you.
Yep.
Time.
time was that interview?
I think it was 1 a.m.
Would you dispute 1257?
No, that sounds correct.
Would you describe that as an aggressive interview?
No.
As a part of your investigating procedure, had you listened to the 911 tape prior to this?
We did.
And you said, who's we?
Myself and Special Agent Owen.
Did you have, can anybody hear? Just speak in the mic, please. Speak in the mic, please, ma'am. Did you have that 911 knowledge in your mind when you were listening to this? Had you already heard it?
Yes.
Okay. And on the 911 tape, how long had Alex Murdoch told the 911 operator been since he'd seen Maggie Murdoch?
He's estimated 1.5 to 2 hours.
To 2 hours?
Mm-hmm.
1.5 to 2 hours. And on this tape, your interview, what had he said about seeing Maggie? When was the last time he'd seen Maggie Murdoch?
That she about 2 hours.
Did he say he took a nap?
He took a nap. Mm-hmm.
Did he say where he went after that?
To check on his mother with Alzheimer's in Hampton.
Okay. Did you find that unusual?
I did.
Why?
Just the time of night.
Why?
With her being an Alzheimer's patient, they tend to be worse at night, so I seemed it was strange to go visit.
What time was the 911 call?
It was 10.
Loud,
I'm sorry. I have to check my notes.
Put the check with it. I'm sorry.
Okay. It was 10.
And this interview was 1257?
Yes, that's correct.
In your interview, in Agent Owen's interview, did the defendant Alex Murdoch tell you he tried to turn Paul over?
He did.
And did he say whether or not he had tried to check Paul's pulse and or Maggie's pulse?
He stated he tried to check both.
What did Mr. Murdoch, Alex Murdoch say about the phone, if anything, that was in Paul's possession?
He stated his phone popped out of his pocket.
When?
When he tried to check his pulse.
Did he try to turn him over?
That's what he said.
Alexander Murdoch is looking at his phone. You remember that?
Correct, yes.
Can you actually see the phone in there and the times and the messages on the video that he's looking at?
You can, on the bottom left of the screen.
And what was that in response to that he was looking at?
When I asked what time he texted Maggie.
So you saw those on his phone looking at those when y'all were talking to him in the car?
I couldn't see from where I was sitting, but reviewing the video, I could see it.
Reviewing the video, did you see it?
Yes.
I've got a transcript here, but at the end of the video, toward the end of the interview, did Mr. Murdoch say again he tried to turn over his son, Paul Murdoch?
He did.
Said he tried to check it.
That's what he said.
And I know I asked you at the first, but I may not have done it too eloquently. Did he first tell you he tried to turn him over?
Yes, he did.
And I figured it out?
Yes.
And the cell phone popped out of his pocket?
That's correct.
And everybody heard it, but then something with it thinking maybe then I put it back down really quickly, then I went, and it's, you can't really understand the rest of it.
Yes.
What did you think about the phone popping out?
That would seem...
The objection sustained.
Have you ever moved dead weight?
I have.
If we could start with Elma, please. Judge, these are a couple of these pictures that I think they have this on top of it, just to warn everybody, these are graphic photos. First is number two. Who's this a picture of?
That's Maggie Murdoch.
Did the defendant say he checked her pulse?
He did.
Did he tell you where?
He did not.
And before I get to it, did the defendant ever tell you he'd been down to the kennels that night in this interview?
No.
After his nap, where did he say he went?
Went to check on his mother in Hampton.
Just again, if you keep your computers coming, please. Fetch one. Court's permission, I'd like for the detective to come down, please, Judge.
Yes.
So technically, I'm going to get what you won't block, and I won't block it. I'm going to get back over here. Did the defendant tell you he tried to get the pulse of his son, Paul Murnau?
He did.
Did he tell you where he tried to get the pulse?
He did not, just that he tried to turn him.
Say that last time.
He tried to turn him.
And he told you he tried to turn him more than once, didn't he?
Yes, he did.
Judge, you're leading him.
How many times did he tell you he tried to turn him?
Twice.
I think you testified you tried to lift dead weight, right?
I have.
Can you describe what's around Paul Murnau?
Blood, brain matter.
And if you were to, where are his hands?
Underneath his body.
If you were to check the pulse of his hands, how would you do it?
You would have to try to lift him up and get his arms out from under him.
Underneath?
Correct.
And rolling?
Correct.
By the way, where's his phone?
It's laying on the backside of his shorts.
Right there. Mm-hmm. Popped out, he said.
Yes.
Is that his brain?
That is.
Mr. Harpootling said blown out of his head?
Correct.
If you tried to take the pulse at the neck, how would you do it?
You would have to try to lift his shoulder to get access his neck.
This way?
Correct.
Whether you this way or this way? Well,
correct.
Either underneath or over here. Is that right?
Yes.
Is that right?
Yes.
I'm sorry. Mm-hmm. Sorry. I don't get it. When you saw Alex Murdaugh, when you first came up to him?
No, just a minute.
I'm about to. Is she going to sit down?
Okay,
that's fine. Why are you questioning or not?
Well, I'm just sure something.
Yeah. Okay. So I apologize.
I've seen this. Go back and sit down.
Thank you.
When you first saw Alex Murnau at the car, did you observe?
I did.
Why?
Just to make mental notes of what he was wearing and how he looked.
What were your mental notes?
That he was clean.
Say that again.
That he was clean.
When you were in the car with him, you were behind him.
I was.
Did you observe his hands?
I did.
Did you see his arms?
I did.
And when you were out on the side of the road beforehand, did you see his shirt?
I did.
His pants?
Yes.
His shoes?
Yes.
Now, when you were at the scene, when you first got there, did you see any footprints in the blood?
No.
Did you see any knee prints in the blood?
No.
Anywhere around the body?
No.
Did you look at his shoes?
I did.
What kind of shoes? Alex Murdaugh's shoes. What kind of shoes were they?
They were like an athletic tennis shoe.
Did you see anything that appeared to be blood on his shoe?
I did not.
I want you to look at the laces of his shirt. Did you see what appeared to be blood on Alex Murdaugh's hands?
I did not.
On his arms?
No.
On his shirt?
None.
On his shorts?
No.
On his shoes?
I did not.
How long was this after the 911 call?
2 hours, 2 to 3 hours.
All this fresh in his mind?
Yes.
How would you describe the defendant's hands when you saw him when you were interviewing him? How would you describe his hands?
They were clean. Clean.
How would you describe his arms?
They were clean.
How would you describe his t-shirt?
Clean.
How would you describe his shorts?
Clean.
How would you describe his shoes?
They were clean.
Bay Portion Dog. Was his phone taken that night, Alex Murdoch?
I believe so.
You're not sure?
I'm not sure, okay. No, sir.
So it may not have been taken?
Yeah.
Now, you were working with... Hey, you don't stand up. Ms. David Owens, you were working with the plan?
Yes.
When you, after this interview, did you go to the actual house at 4147 now?
I did.
Okay. Did you go inside?
Just in the foyer, yes.
Okay. Did Agent Owens go inside?
He did.
Okay. Were the defendant's shirt, shoes, and pants collected by Agent Owens?
Yes.
You didn't collect them, he did?
I did not.
Okay. And those are the same shirt, shoes, and pants he was wearing there?
Correct.
And Sled got them that night?
Yes.
Okay. After this, did you assist Sled in some things that came up in the investigation?
I did.
Okay. And I don't believe this would be object to, but did you assist him with getting Maggie's car?
I did.
Okay. Some other cell phone evidence?
Search warrants.
Were there a search of some of the areas that you attended?
Yes.
In and around?
Yes.
Moselle?
Correct, yes.
Okay. Search of ponds?
Yes.
Okay. So you assisted Sled at some point throughout this investigation?
Yeah, anytime they needed anything from the sheriff's office, Agent Owen could go through me or my captain, whether it was storing a vehicle as evidence or using our evidence bay to process anything, I was there to assist in any way that they needed.
And did you assist, I guess, in the helping with Alex Murdaugh's car as far as getting anything out of that car?
No, Sled processed through that.
Now, if you just listen to my questions, not the lead judge, I just want to ask you one final question. Is the individual in this courtroom who told you he tried to take the pulse of Maggie and Paul, is the individual in this courtroom who told you he tried to turn Paul over, told you that once, twice? Is the individual in this courtroom that you took that statement from, that we saw on this video, in this courtroom, and is the individual you described as clean from head to toe in this courtroom?
Yes, he is.
Please point him out for the jury.
He's sitting at the defense table wearing a grayish-brown jacket and a white shirt.
Your Honor, we'd like the record to reflect she has pointed out the defendant, Richard Alexander Murdaugh.
It does.
Thank you, Ms. Oliver.
Ladies and gentlemen, we have you go to the jury room for a break. Please do not discuss the case.
And that wraps up the first segment of coverage for today from the courtroom of the trial of Alex Murdaugh. Three more to come throughout the day. Be sure to press subscribe wherever you download podcasts as to not miss any of them. As our continuous coverage moves forward with True Crime Today, I'm Tony Bruschi. Stay with us.